This is Confessions of an Actress podcast, and I'm your host, Meredith Patterson. For the past two decades, I have worked as an actress in the entertainment industry on Broadway, in TV, and film. This podcast is my insight, observations, and in-depth interviews with my friends and colleagues about what life is really like in show business. Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Confessions of an Actress podcast, episode 71, and I am so excited to have one of my favorite people in the entertainment industry, my friend, the amazing Chase Brock. You know, Chase has been called prolific in both The New Yorker and The New York Times, and I definitely agree with that. I think he's also eclectic. He is an incredible performer and dancer, as well as a choreographer who's worked in theater, modern dance, ballet, opera, television, and even video games. He did the very popular dance on Broadway back in the day, and I remember actually helping him a little bit on that in the 42nd Street part of the dance, which I believe is We're in the Money. And I don't know why I just thought of that, but he has done so many things in this business, and even starting and debuting on Broadway at the age of 16 in Susan Stroman's revival of The Music Man, which was such a huge hit. And I remember seeing that, and right down the street, I was doing Julie Taymor's The Green Bird, which he ended up working for her on Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark musical as a choreographer years later. Chase is just an amazing artist and an amazing human being. And I can't wait for you to listen to this conversation that we had, which brought a lot of happiness to my spirit. And we even talked about working together again, which would be amazing. And I hope that that actually happens in this next chapter of our lives. So without further ado, my friend, the incredible Chase Brock.
It's so true that I do see color when I hear your name. Is that weird? Oh. Is that a weird association? But I really do, because I guess it's just the pictures of you with the bright colors that you love to wear. And just you, to me, are such a vibrant spirit and person that, like, I can't imagine you ever wearing anything but bright colors and that surrounding you. So is that a weird thing?
No, I don't know. It's so sweet. This is dorky, but I used to have a secret mission, which was I wanted to brighten the lives of everyone I passed on the street. And I loved walking around New York in, like, wild neon technicolor combinations and thinking that some random person who might pass me is just like, whoa, that's so that's so fun. How great. And everyone was wearing black when I moved to New York. And so I like the idea of just being this little like elf running around the city, like polka dotted.
No, that's not a secret dream. It is a dream. That is what's happening. Like, that to me is you. Like, that's the way I think of you. And it's funny because I think it's the songwriter Sean Colvin. She wrote in a song about New York blacks, like the New York blacks. That's what you wear. Yes. And it's so true. I still have a lot of black clothing that I wear.
It's the uniform.
Yeah. It's the uniform.
Yeah.
But, oh my gosh, it's been so long since I've talked to you. Aww. And how are you? And that's kind of how I start each interview.
Yeah.
Because it's been such a, you know, crazy, not just year, but, you know, many years. I just want to check in.
Oh, thank you, honey. Well, I always joke every time I sort of interact with anybody in the last year and say, like, how are you? Which is what you say when you first catch up with someone. It's like, that question is so ludicrous. That's become like an absolutely absurd question to ask anyone.
And kind of true.
You know, and so it's like there's a level of understood wackiness about how we all are, because our worlds are upside down and America's been upside down and we've been, you know, just all of it. But all of that aside, if it's even possible to put that aside, I'm doing well as just like a day-to-day, moment-to-moment way of existing. I feel like we've all pivoted and we've all figured out ways to adapt to other things. And in some cases, we've all found things we enjoy more than schlepping around New York City. And, you know, and so I think there's been a lot of silver lining and a lot of great stuff that's come up just that has nothing to do with show business and aspiration and competition and all that stuff.
And all the things that we normally are, you know, having swirling around our artist brains is like, you know, your show and the next thing and the auditions and the projects and performing and, you know, your amazing dance company and all of these things that normally take that space up, I know have had to be set aside. Mm-hmm. But I find that the positive-minded people like yourself and myself, we are finding the silver lining. We're finding the good that's coming out of it, right?
I think so.
And I think that that is it's a lesson for the people who maybe can't find their way. But of course, everybody's dealing with this on a different level. Yep. And like you said, it's a loaded question. How are you?
Totally.
It is not a simple question anymore. No.
And I think that you're absolutely right that everybody's dealing with all the parts of this. And it's like a multifaceted thing that's going on. And everybody's dealing with different, you know, parts of it differently. But I think we will take stuff from the collective experience of 2020 and now 2021 that will transform our lives in really exciting ways. And it feels like I'm not trying to multitask like I once was, and I don't want to come back into the rat race, you know, in quite the same way as before.
Yeah.
You get a chance to come off the merry-go-round if you're lucky. And I'm not even really talking about people who are fortunate enough to have time to reflect and stuff. If you're really in theater, you aren't working, and we haven't worked in a year now, or almost a year. Once you're off that carousel and you exhale for a while, I don't think that a lot of us are going to want to do that same kind of climbing that we were doing. And that's a good thing.
It's a good thing. And I, you know, it's shifting. And I was talking to a girlfriend about this. You know, if this had happened when you were 16 years old and you were making your Broadway debut in Music Man, which I want to talk about, or if, you know, I was doing Peggy Sawyer and I was in that beginning moments of our careers, do you think that that would change how you're feeling about this? Do you think that ambitious animal that kind of comes out of all of us when we are dancers and performers, and not in a negative way, but just wanting so much. Mm-hmm. And those, like, speak to those kids. Like, how do you think that you would deal with that, the pandemic, in that way versus now be having a little bit of, you know, seasoning on us?
Yes. Thank you for putting it that way.
I'm with you, honey.
I was just plucking white hairs from my eyebrows, and so I appreciate the seasoning, that euphemism.
Hey, I always say we're lucky that we get to be the age we are, right?
Yes,
we're
that's
lucky.
Right, absolutely.
And yeah.
you bring up such a good point, which is I think the saddest, when I think about, like, show business, you know, as the angle that we're talking, you know, that we're looking at this pandemic and everything, I think I am absolutely the saddest for those people, because I do think that, man, I mean, the way you put it, back in our Broadway, you know, chorus girl days, it would have been wild to, I mean, it could, because I can remember, and I know both of us had this, that level of just dreaming and that drive.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine sort of it being like, well, guess what? You're not going to do anything for about 2 years. I mean, I would have.
Or you just got your first Broadway show. Ugh. Like, I know so many stories of people who just got their first Broadway show, or they just got their first role.
I know.
And you know how hard that is, that all the stars have to align for things like that to happen. And so, you know, you're sitting there going, but wait a minute, this was my moment.
I know.
And then also the feeling of, you know, I feel guilty that I'm so, like, sad about this when people are dying. So there's all these layers to it. But I'm with you. I feel really sad for the kids who are starting out or who have just gotten their big break.
Totally. There's people, I like you, it's like my feed has been full of friends who, like, just got cast in their first Broadway ensemble and they had their costume fittings and rehearsal, but they never got to have a put in because of the pandemic, or people who had the first preview of their show and then their show was frozen after two previews, or, you know, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And you know.
Or the writers or the choreographers, you know, it's like all the layers of the creative team, or somebody who just got their brand new musical to Broadway. Mm. Like that, you know, all of those things we know take decades sometimes.
Well, I have a new musical I'm directing and developing with a brilliant young composer and lyricist and book writer, Eric Dietz. And we've been working on this for several years. As you know, it takes like, you know, it takes like 2 years to get to like a first reading kind of a point. And then really from doing readings in Manhattan where you're really showing these things to people, then it's like another 2 years before you have, if you're lucky, a regional premiere, or if you're even luckier, some kind of off-Broadway or New York nonprofit run or any of that. And, you know, we had just gotten into a theater festival as part of their New Works Festival. And the festival was happening in April of 2020. And you know how the end of this story goes.
And, oh my God.
You know, now it's like that theater festival is looking at possibly fall 21 or spring of 22. So we're at least a year and a half or 2 years out from that. Not to mention now all the theaters that are booking, like regional theaters who do develop new work, now they're trying to do reschedules from 2020 and from 2021. So,
oh yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, I think if you have some kind of new thing you're developing, you're probably looking at the 2023, 2024 season.
Oh, wow.
You know, so, but worse things have happened in life. And honestly, at the end of the day, we're better off than a lot of people who are struggling so much right now. And so, you know, there's that for
but
context.
Exactly. but giving us, you know, in our perspective, in our world, that moment of, you know, oh God, this is what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And knowing that there is a massive ripple effect with that in terms of like finding the right cast. Cause I know, and you know, that that's a lot about the success of a musical, or, you know, the journey of it. And are they going to be available? Are they going to even want to be in the business? All these things. But also the theaters that, you know, we are in the theatrical side of it, the performing side, and there is not as much money as there is maybe in Netflix or Disney or HBO or any of those, you know, the different mediums of the entertainment industry. Like live theater, especially regional or off-Broadway houses, you know, who knows if they're going to survive?
Yes.
Right?
It's a very, very big question. And I think there's probably going to be a lot of different answers and a lot of different outcomes. And from shrinking, theaters that have to shrink a lot, to theaters that just flat out close, to theaters that change hands or change management or change directions, and theaters that go big and the communities hopefully will rally, or theaters that go big with the hope of that and then it doesn't quite pan out. And I mean, you know, we're running a nonprofit organization, and I know this, of course, for my nearly 15 years now of my dance company.
Has it been 15 years?
Can you imagine?
Oh my God.
I know.
That's amazing.
I know. I'm hoping that we sort of are able to get back on stage somehow and do a 15th anniversary, because I'm watching the Mark Morris Dance Group celebrate their 40th anniversary virtually right now. And it's like such a heartbreak, you know, just because that's not what anybody imagined. And as you know, what dance and live theater and performance are really about are being in a room with a bunch of people experiencing the alchemy of that kind of thing together. And, you know, it's just, but running a nonprofit or profit organization in the absolute best of times, is a crazy proposition that is like always feels like you're on the brink of extinction. And so now that we actually are, it's going to be fascinating seeing who comes back first and when and how. And I think figuring out that what the risk level is and then trying to mitigate that is going to be such a big part of all of our lives, because I don't know, you don't want to be the first people back. And it's like, even if we get cleared, like if people are mostly vaccinated by October, you know, my dance company usually performs at Theater Row on 42nd Street at November or December. It's like, Are we really going to try that like 1 month after they say it's okay? Probably not. And that is about audience, will the audience come back if we come back? Because we can't afford to do even one season in New York without the maximum amount of ticket sales possible, or we will
absolutely
never come back. And so, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's going to be just an absolute puzzle. And I think one of the things that's so confusing is planning time, because, you know, from your work on Broadway and on tours and in things like that, that, I mean, it takes at least 6 months to plan one of these things. So you can't just, I mean, if we knew right now, November 15th, we are a go, I think some planning would be taking place. But I think because it's like, well, let's get to November 15th and look around and see if we're all still alive. I think that is like, well, then we're not going to really be doing big theater like that until March, because you just the planning time. I mean, not to mention getting it on sale, but like, as you said, casting. A lot of these shows are going to have to recast because people's lives have changed.
Absolutely.
You know?
And they've been displaced out of New York. They've, you know, there's like that, like I said, that's the ripple effect. They've gone home to Pennsylvania or, you know, wherever they were from. And now they're not sure if they can come back. And also the companies aren't sure if they can, you know, pay them at the rates that they need to be paid. And then there's, I feel like everybody's kind of going to pause, like saying like, okay, are we all coming back? And we're going to wait and see what theater or what show like happens first. And maybe that's Hamilton, because I think that they're coming back at half capacity or something like that. I think I heard that.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but like waiting and seeing, oh, is there going to be an outbreak, or are they going to shut them down again? And it's just so so multi-layered and stressful. And like you said, you're always kind of hanging on a thread anyway, mm-hmm. in the performing arts, in the live part of this. And we do this because we love it.
Yes.
We do this because it's our passion. And like you said, the molecular feeling of being in a room together, I miss it so much.
Oh gosh,
I miss that feeling. And as a dancer, there is nothing really you can't, yes, you could do a virtual, you know, 15-year celebration of the Chase Brock experience, but to not have the dancers together and you, all of it is just, it doesn't feel right.
It's not the same. And, you know, different people have had different takes on that. Like, honestly, some young people have done extraordinary, I mean, and it doesn't even relate to the pandemic. It's just like, they are creating this incredible content online and these virtual things. And like, I love watching all of that, but that is actually not who I am. And it's probably my age as well. But like, for me, I really have not been interested in doing any virtual choreography. Like I've been more interested in spending this year trying to finally write something, or trying to like return to painting, or working on the kind of interior design stuff that I enjoy in real estate. And like, I haven't wanted to do our theater art, as you described it, that kind of magic feeling in the air. I don't really want to do it until we can do that again. And I don't begrudge anyone of ways of adapting and all of that, but like, that's kind of my personal take. And so I definitely am more on the side of waiting until it's, of course, safe, but also until we can really do the thing we do, because I don't really want to do it any other way. You know?
I'm with you on that. And I think that it's really great because it's breaking open different sides of you, sides that you've, you know, like you said, painting and writing and interior design that you've done maybe here and there when, you know, but now that you're off the roller coaster, so to speak, you're able to dive into that. And that to me is exciting because I am doing the same thing. I haven't taken one virtual dance class.
Yes.
I can't seem to get into it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yep.
And maybe it is that, you know, I'm of an older, you know, seasoned.
I'm of a different vintage.
I'm of a different vintage. But it's just something it's strange because I've been having, and maybe you've had this, I've had off and on dreams of like going back to like classes at Broadway Dance, or when I was on scholarship at Steps Dance Studio, and like I like dancing in those rooms and the smell and the sweat and all of those things. It's a strange thing as an artist to feel that, and also just like and the feeling of being on stage again.
Yes. Isn't that interesting how you are flashing back to things you hadn't like flashed back to in a while, and you're having like memories and longings that actually dig back farther into your kind of origin story as a performer. And I think that's useful. And to me, that's, I don't know what it means and what it adds up to for everybody. And it's probably different, but I think that that feeling is a useful part of all this. That coming full circle somehow, and whether it means that one goes back to that or just moves forward with a kind of like, oh, that I'm acknowledging that part of me, or I'm missing that sweaty room at BDC that I never thought I'd, you know, one that's been very powerful for me and a lot of people is actually because I lost a longtime mentor of mine, and we all lost the great Annie Reinking. And I think I've been, along with many people, in this like soup, this like swirl of memory. And for me, it's about meeting her and working with her for the first time at Broadway Theater Project when I was 13, 14, 15. And that, I'm totally like you. I'm thinking about those classes. Like, I'm thinking about taking acting class from her and taking her jazz class and stuff in the University of South Florida dance studios. And that's, I always carry her with me, but I have not thought about like really going back to like what those run-throughs were like and watching her.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think a lot of us are in these time warps and these memory tunnels. It's very interesting.
And it's fascinating to me because I'm thinking about like my classes I used to take with Chet Walker at Broadway Dance, and Nicole Fosse would be in that class, and she would, you know, and they were developing the musical Fosse, and I was, you know, this sunny round face, you know, blonde who was completely, Chet told me, I love you, but you're too sunny for Fosse. And I was like, no, I was this little Peggy Sawyer among like the Holly Cruikshanks. Literally, like dancing with Holly Cruikshank, who's like this beautiful Amazon goddess to me, and I literally had a dream the other day about those classes and like the dark room and just the awesomeness of it all, and I really do think that it is a lesson, but it's also kind of going into like your spirit as an artist, as a dancer, and knowing that that's a chapter of your life to celebrate, and now whatever's breaking open when you had to kind of pause is also a chapter of your creativity. Because I know just from my knowledge of you as a choreographer and a dancer yourself, and that this has been something that has, like, this stretches back to probably your earliest memory. Truly. In Flat Rock, North Carolina, where you grew up, you know?
Yes.
And this has been your passion forever. Right?
That's right. It's absolutely true. And I think, it's that full circle feeling and like remembering roots and stuff. I think that's good because that's some kind of processing. And again, I don't know what it all means yet. And I don't know that any of us really do, because actually we don't we don't know what the end of this is. We don't know where this is leading, you know? I think we've all been focused on like, God, I don't want this to sound pessimistic, but we've all been focused on like, oh, is it going to be September now that we're back, or are we going to?
Yeah.
But it's like, what does back really mean? Like, I think you have the right idea with saying, I know that Hamilton is trying to be leaders, and bless them, because they do have a kind of financial position that allows them to step out. And they also have, they have that combined with an interest, like general interest level, that I think all of that works potentially well together. But I think, like, what does that really mean? Like, if Hamilton returns to Broadway first, I don't know. Like, we really don't know what the next year or 2 years or 5 years is going to look like for the larger ecosystem of the arts. And so what you're pointing out about this kind of, you know, taking us back to our earliest roots in Flat Rock, North Carolina, that's interesting, because that's going to lead us somewhere, whatever the next step is. And I like seeing, I mean, you know, as a politically minded person who's aware that all of us are concentrated in New York and concentrated in California, it's actually been very interesting hearing about people, friends and colleagues who are like, I'm moving to Iowa, or I'm moving to, you know, Pennsylvania, or I'm moving to Texas, or I'm moving to North Carolina or Georgia, like,
or Whitefish, Montana, like I just
did.
Oh,
my God.
Who ever thought we? Never in a million years did I think I'd be living here in Whitefish, Montana, but it is beautiful. And I have a friend from 42nd Street. We did Broadway together.
Oh, wow.
He has a theater company here. And so we have been coming here for work, you know, concert work here and there. But we, you know, I am hearing the same thing that you're saying about people moving to smaller towns, which I think in my positive Pollyanna mind, Peggy Sawyer mind, is that this is going to disperse in a great way a lot of amazing artists into the country to influence then, you know, generations who would not necessarily have that connection to. You know what I mean? Like you, I know that you've gone back to Flat Rock, North Carolina, into the Flat Rock Playhouse many times and given back and done some shows there. And I think that's so awesome. But I do, you know, you have been on my mind, like thinking about that theater and thinking about like all of my friends who have been moving to, like you said, Texas, Iowa, wherever they're going.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, it's very interesting. I think it's healthy. I think it's healthy for the people. Like, it's healthy that some people who have, I mean, you know, it's hard to quit the New York thing, right? And it's very tied up, as you said, with our entire lives of ambition. And everyone, again, everyone is doing what they need to do, hopefully. But I think it's healthy that a number of us have sort of said, you know, there's other things that make me happy too. Or I might come back to that at some point. Or I've been through that and I enjoyed it and it was a phase and I'm moving into a new phase. And I think that's healthy for the people making those decisions to finally say, this is the push I maybe needed to kind of try something else. And in some cases, I'm very aware that that wasn't like an elegant push. It was like, I have no money to rent an apartment anymore, you know.
There's nothing elegant about it.
That's correct. That's
what, unless maybe somebody somewhere did it in an elegant way. But it definitely, things like this, when they happen in your life, it does focus in on what matters.
Yes.
Focuses in on what's important and what, and are you really doing what you want to be doing?
That's right.
And when you have a chance to pause, because listen, there was like, you know, 10 years where I literally had no pause.
Yes.
I was extremely lucky of performing and really not having a break in between TV and film. And
you were, you know, Judy Haynes.
And I was Judy Haynes.
Brilliantly.
But I mean, even, you know, and then even doing like, do you remember when, you know, your husband, Rob Berman, like worked with me and we did, I did a show at Feinstein's.
Yes.
And then we did, yeah. And he and I worked on that show together, which I still kind of go like, oh my God, I can't believe that, you know, he just.
You should do it
worked
again.
Worked with me, just, we should do it again. And then you and I were always talking about doing a one woman show together. And I was like,
I
oh my God, these amazing people, I want to do it.
Oh my God.
But I had such amounts of like projects on my shoulders, which
that's
I
right.
loved, and my spirit loved it, my ambition loved it. But then when I became pregnant, that was my moment of pause. And it did make me go, this is a new chapter. And I love that still. I want to be the Betty White of Broadway, or, you know, just always be working until I'm like 100. Literally, that would be awesome if I was like in mid spin on Broadway and then like died on stage. That'd be amazing. That's like,
for the audience,
like
it would be
dream.
Harrowing. But for you, yes.
They'd be like, that's amazing.
Stage management's not looking forward to that performance.
Not
that particular matinee.
But I've never thought of ever letting this go. And when things like a pandemic obviously happen and everyone's in this collective place of your work and everything, your livelihood and your dreams kind of just freezing, you know, it does kind of, it brings me back to that time where I had that pause and I thought, you know, I'm gonna think of what's next for me. Not that something's over,
yes,
but what's next? Because that, I think, is the most exciting part of our business, is it's not linear. You never know what's around the corner. You never know what the next, you know, 5 years is gonna bring. And yes, there's a lot of rebuilding, but you just don't know.
That's right.
And I feel like your instinct should guide you.
Yes.
Right?
Well, I love what you're saying, which is like, you never knew anyway. Like, we don't know what the next 5 years are going to be, but actually, we never knew what anything was going to be. That's a really good way to look at that. It's not, yeah, it's not for the weak or the meek or the people who love, you know, just to know sort
normalcy.
Of
normalcy.
Yeah, like regularity. But yeah. A lot of us didn't really get into all this for any of that. And as you said, even when we've expanded and gone in other corners and other directions, we probably still have a degree of that spirit inside us. You know, it's like when they tell you all the things that studying dance as a young person gives you, whether or not you ever become a dancer, like balance and mm-hmm. order and the ability to sort of see things visually and whatever. It's like the same kind of thing. Like the person who goes into show business professionally and really like toughs it out for 10 years or whatever, like you probably are ready to go into any new adventure and adapt quickly and have things change and be off balance and then not know about stuff for a while. Like it does. I think we carry that all with us no matter where we've branched out to.
Absolutely. And this leads me to questioning how you were raised in Flat Rock, North Carolina to be the amazing artist that you are, because, and to be able to come to New York at the young age of 13 to work with Anne Ranking, like how did that all happen for you?
Oh, well, thank you for that. I think,
I mean, I go to the fact that you were 16 years old when Susan Stroman did The Music Man and watching that show. That's just a dream come true. But even prior to that, hearing that you worked with the great Anne Ranking and all of that, like that's you must have had some incredible influences in your life.
Well, thank you. I really had I had an incredible ballet teacher named Ronnie Zink, and she had been with Rhode Island Ballet and a number of companies. And she was really serious business. And she, when I went to her, I sort of graduated to her, and she took me on as a project, like as a private student and everything. And she also pulled me, you know, I'm from North Carolina, but she pulled me to South Carolina to study with Carlos Agudelo at Ballet Spartanburg. And that's where I was in Nutcracker and Coppelia and Peter and the Wolf and all of that. And, you know, Ronnie was sort of merciless about the technique. And so, I mean, had I not gone through a kind of breaking down and rebuilding ballet wise for several years as a teenager, I certainly would never have caught Anne Ranking or Susan Stroman's eye. I mean, I really think that's due to Ronnie's hard work. And I also had an absolutely amazing mentor, the great Betsy Bassan, who was for many, many years the sort of founder, really, of the, well, founder may not be true. Wendy Wilkins was the founder, but Betsy Bassan was the person who sort of made Flat Rock Playhouses. At that time, it was originally called Theater for Young People. First, it was called Children's Theater, then Theater for Young People. But Theater for Young People is where it really grew up. And she was my teacher there in acting and in directing. And she took a group of us and called us the conservatory class. And we were, you know, high school students who were doing Shakespeare monologues, and we were scoring them very rigorously and like doing the deep work that you do. We were not just sort of singing and dancing, although we were doing that as well and learning original choreography from West Side Story. And we were, the other thing that I want to really say that was so special about the education at Flat Rock is and you know this from being there, you know, it is a working theater. It's an equity. At the time that I was growing up, it was really still a summer stock theater that was sort of becoming a regional theater. But it had an extraordinary repertory company of actors back then. And many of them are still gracing the stages. And in fact, like I got to have the great Scott Treadway as my Charlie Cowell when I directed Music Man at Flat Rock many
so
years
good.
Later. Oh my God, he's extraordinary.
He's amazing.
I mean, there's so many of them. But, you know, that's how I learned about theater was not in a classroom. It was that playhouse was our classroom. And so I was in paint crew and I worked out on the back deck and learned about scenic painting. And I was with Bridget in the costume shop, sewing buttons on. And Betsy Bassan also, you know, Betsy made sure that we were having these practicums. We were doing practical lessons in all sides of technical theater. And, you know, and I think so even from then, I was interested in the making of theater, because that's how I learned about theater, was like with a paintbrush in hand or at a strike, like dealing with cabling after, you know, in the one day changeover from Crazy for You to Fiddler on the Roof. And so I was a follow spot operator for Big River, you know, just I don't know. And that's, I think that's the answer, honestly, is that I was this theater animal because I was raised in a theater. So I was in the catwalk of the theater, not a classroom at my high school, if that makes sense.
It does. And it sounds like you literally, you started the foundation of dance as ballet. And I had the same experience. I had a very, very strict teacher. And I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful for her. But I also had experience in theater on all different sides. Mm. So doing props, doing, you know, painting sets, choreographing stuff, all of those things, I think, for our community is so good for performers to do and to be on all different sides of it so that you really understand how communal it is to put a show on. And, you know, I'm yes. here in Whitefish, Montana with the Alpine Theater Project, and I'm teaching Broadway dance. I'm teaching on camera technique. I'm teaching them about industry and networking. I'm teaching them about the business side of show and all of these things. And hearing you talk about your teachers, it is such a wonderful feeling to be able to give back. And I've always felt that way. And I know that you have given back so much to Flat Rock and to, you know, kids. I know you do speaking engagements and you've done, you know, Thank teaching you. Engagements. And I adore you for that. And I think that we need more of that in the world.
Thank you. You know, that I think also, I mean, that comes from Annie. You know, she, her absolute, you know, belief in the fact that this business is healthiest when we're passing it on. And
yeah,
I, you know, I also had such frustration when I was that young 16-year-old chorus boy, who, because I wanted at that point, I already, you know, rehearsing, going through the Music Man rehearsal process on Broadway, I loved it so much, and I watched Stroh like a hawk, the only thing I loved being on Broadway. I mean, what's not to love about that? That's so glamorous and wonderful and mythic. Yes. But I was honestly sort of depressed the minute the rehearsal process ended and the show opened, because I really confirmed that I wanted to be back in a rehearsal room. I wanted to be making, and that was really where I wanted to be. And at that age, there were a lot of people who were hanging on and who weren't, in my opinion, not doing great work, but they weren't ready to let it go. And, you know, and so yeah. I'm trying to be better about that and a better mentor. I mean, I also can see now with like the perspective of time that I was rather young to be sort of taking the reins of anything. But I think, you know, that was a thing Annie always talked about, was passing it on. And she gave us so much. And I think that's important. I think it's important to try to be feeding this community so that it's a cycle, you know.
Yeah, I think age is just a number, because I know when I was 16 years old, I felt like I was 30. You know, I kind of see that in you. I see like a, you know, a kindred spirit in that way, because I do know that you that feeling of wanting to be back in the rehearsal room, I think, you know, yeah, that's awesome. I think it's awesome to recognize that. And I did. I'm a Stroh baby as well. She yes. gave me my first Equity job.
Was it Christmas Carol? I forgot.
It was Christmas Carol yes. at Madison Square Garden. And I had just come off tour and I had done Crazy for You, which was the first show I ever saw on Broadway. Mm. And I fell in love with everything Susan Stroman.
Yes.
And, you know, being blonde myself and being a dancer, like I envision myself in the room with her. And when I got to be in the room with her and watch her, and Mike Ockrent, her husband at the time, was alive and was an amazing director, and Paul Gimignani, and that whole team. I do feel the same way that you feel. Being in the rehearsal room and creating is different than getting into the wheelhouse of the show.
Yeah.
Even though, I don't know if you've done this since, but I just watched the Tony performance of 76 Trombones that you guys did. And I thought, because I was going to teach the kids you know, did some original Broadway choreography. Yes. And I'm like, let me see what Stroh did. I can't remember. It's probably not that difficult. But oh my God, was my memory wrong? I watched you guys kicking your face and triple turn, you know, galore. And I just, it brought me back to another dream state of me remembering being in the room with Stroh. Oh. And she's one of those great legends of Broadway. But yes. I understand what you mean about the depression of being in the show and then wanting to be, you know, which probably led you to creating your own
definitely
dance company at 23 years old.
Oh, definitely. That's exactly right. By then I had started working enough because I produced a showcase of my choreography when I was 18 at 890 Broadway because I wanted to do it in Michael Bennett's building. And
the legendary 890.
The legendary 890.
I love it. Yeah.
Bought with money from a chorus line, and it's where Dreamgirls and sort of, yeah, Dreamgirls was made. But, and so many things, ABT and Ballet Tech and now Gibney Dance. But anyway, and in fact, we rehearsed Music Man at 890 Broadway. It was sort of the end of that era of shows all rehearsing down there.
I know. It's legendary for sure.
That's right. But, you know, Stroh came to that, and Annie was out of town, although she sent a lovely note, and both of them were so supportive. And anyway, I got my first agents for choreography there when I was 18, and I retired. I stopped at that moment. I stopped performing, and I never did again. And, you know, by the time I was, you know, as you said, 23, I had started getting... I was doing that the sort of wonderful kind of work that you do when you're building a career, you're in the building phase. And so I was doing a lot of wonderful benefits for Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, and I was doing galas and cabarets, and I was doing, I did an industrial for GlaxoSmithKline drug company that was like a Fred and Ginger kind of thing. And
industrials.
It was at the Copacabana. You know
the things we miss. The things we miss now. Oh my industrials. God.
Indeed. I know. Took to an industrial. And it was sort of the end of that period as well. But anyway, I wasn't doing the things I dreamt of doing, but I was doing what I now know to be the stuff that you do in the beginning to learn and practice. And I did a cruise ship job. I directed and choreographed a show for Holland America Line. And I was kind of a fill-in person because one of their normal people, their usual people, had a personal issue. And I sort of did the show, and then their person came back and sort of dismantled the show. And, you know, all that stuff that kind of happens in these, you know, corporate situations and whatever, where you're not, it's not like you're making your art. You're doing work for hire, and they can do whatever they want with it.
Of course.
But anyway, at the end of that experience, I had a little bit of money from that job, and I said, I have to put on an evening of my work that is unfiltered. My soul must do it, or I'm not going to be able to continue going in show business. And I said, I don't care, and I really meant this. I said, I don't care if three people come to my little thing downtown. I just have to do it. And I rented the theater at what is now Gibney at 280 Broadway, but it was then Dance New Amsterdam, because I had seen a dance concert Larry Kegwin's company did there, and I just loved what Larry was doing and how he used that space. And I basically launched a company kind of in you know, one weekend. And then it really worked, and people suddenly could see my voice. And so, ironically, I had invited everybody from theater, and so now I started, Bart Scheer came to that first season and then asked me to choreograph his opera, Romeo and Juliet, which we did two times at the Salzburg Festival, and eventually it's what took me to the Metropolitan Opera 10 years later.
That's amazing.
And we've done it now on great performances, and it's been in movie theaters, and anyway, and you know, that came out of my little show in a 99-seat theater, and...
And your vision to do that, you know, that's something that I know that all artists, you know, need to tap into and follow, that intuition or that feeling that I must do this.
Yes.
That's the visionary part of what we do. And I mean, I know the only time I ever got to dance your steps was was a Chase Brock experience gala.
Yes.
And I was so just elated to be a part of that. And I hope I know that there's gonna be more moments moments. Ugh. Maybe you'll take it a little easy on me and my seasoned body.
Oh, I loved getting to work with you. I mean, I've been such a fan of your dancing. And, you know, even though we hadn't worked together, you know, I was at the Neil Simon in Music Man, and you, of course, were leading 42nd Street as Peggy Sawyer at the Ford Center, where I later did Spider-Man. But, you know, yeah. I think I had admired you for so long. And then obviously my husband, music supervised the beautiful show White Christmas with Randy Skinner's glorious choreography and Walter Bobby's wonderful direction. And you were so magical and perfectly cast. I mean, there's no one else who could have done what you did. And
oh, you're so sweet.
So I'm so happy we got to do that gala together and that you said yes. And, you know, I had an opportunity in those galas to invite wonderful guests who I had admired and wanted to work with, but didn't have an exact way to really work with them. And so you were one of those. And I also hope we will do more. And something I've actually been thinking about, because I wouldn't say I'm necessarily at the end of my company's trajectory, but I think I am in that place where I'm thinking about bucket list things choreographically. And part of it's like, I've made 31 works for that company. And like many of those are hour-long dances or shows. And I've done a lot, and I don't have an endless amount left. And, you know, but as I think about the bucket list, one of the things that I'm really interested in is making something with older dancers. And mm-hmm. I'm specifically thinking about people.
Oh, you said the word, Chase. You said older.
Well, I mean it in the sense that when I think about...
No, I'm very open about my age. I'm like, it's on the internet, everybody. But I also feel... I also feel like, yes, what you're speaking to, there is this, you know, seasoned or older dancers that, as you would say, that bring a different element to dance. And you know, I wouldn't say better, but it's just...
It's exquisite.
It's exquisite. And I love it. I love it. I love dancing at my age.
Yes. There's a sense of like, I mean, the deep body intelligence, like even if we were doing a play, what a dancer brings in terms of their bodies. I mean, you just can't get that anywhere else. And I'm sort of inspired by Netherlands Dance Theater and NDT3, which was all dancers over 40, I think, was the way that it started. They had it. So most companies have a second company, which is younger people. And they were the first company I was aware of that had a third company, which was actually dancers who had basically either retired or sort of graduated out of the main company. And oh my God, the work that they made was extraordinary. It had like elements of clowning. And I mean that in like the highest sense of what clowning is. And this kind of behavior and exaggeration and like frailty. And I mean, you know, the things that you know about life. Like I always say, if I was an actor today, I would be such a better actor than I ever was when I was being an actor, because now I've gone through heartbreak and lived life and, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like I'm a better performer and even a better dancer now than I was back in my Peggy Sawyer days. And, you know, that commedia dell'arte kind of way of performing and using your body is so, you know, in any work that I ever do in terms of acting, singing, any of it, I always draw from being a dancer
and that spirit
in me. So I'm on board.
Yes. I can't wait.
You could ask me 1,000 times to dance for you, and you know that I would. I adore you and Rob so much. And just to be around you, you know, it is a dream. And so when things get back up and running or however we can connect and do this, I see it. I'm going to have dreams about it, actually.
Oh my God, I hope you do. You know, Wendy Whalen has become a friend of mine, and I just...
Are you kidding me? I just had like a heart flutter. I love her so much.
Oh, me too.
Oh my gosh. Her documentary.
Yes. Wasn't that powerful?
Oh God. So powerful. She is one of my heroes in ballet. Same. I mean, I adore her.
Same. And you know, I've been fortunate to get to know her in the past few years, and she's come and seen.
Tell her I said hi.
I will. I certainly will.
I've never met her. My 13-year-old self is getting giddy.
Of course. Anyway, everyone's 13-year-old self is giddy about Wendy Whalen. And, you know, similarly, You know, the great Elizabeth Parkinson is a friend of mine.
Yes.
And she, I'm returning this year to teach at her summer program after many, many years apart. I mean, I was there 10 years ago and she kept asking, which was so lovely. And I kept not being able to go. And I'm just doing it this year. This is like that pandemic mindset where it's like, Rob and I are both doing it. We're going to just prioritize the time for that.
Oh, I love it.
And, but I mean, she in so many ways is like my favorite dancer in I mean, just, oh my God, because between doing both Anne Reinking and Gwen Verdon's roles in Fosse to where I first saw her, which was doing that amazing Harlequin solo in, Billboards for Joffrey Ballet to, to her amazing like role as Brenda in Moving Out for the great Twyla Tharp. I mean, it's like she
Moving Out was my first time I ever saw her. And then I think I took class. I think I took the same class with her once. And I was like petrified. I was like in the back and she was in the front and I was just like staring at her like, that's her.
I know. Oh, she's like,
she's amazing.
To me, she was like our Sylvie Guillaume. She was like the Sylvie Guillaume of Broadway or something. But anyway, but you know, she is someone who also, and also she's so curious. Like she continues to be interested. Like she danced for Martha Clark and just so many different people. And so she's someone, and I don't know if she would do it. I have to coax her back. But like, I now do fantasize about making this piece for, you know, alumni of my company, people who were in the original 15 years ago. When also most of the dancers were older than me and I was younger. And so now some of them are so seasoned and beautifully formed adults in the next phases of their lives. But you know that it's right there in their port de bras or the way they hold their head. And, thinking about just older dancers and how that's one of the things I really want to do is make a piece that capitalizes on all the things that dancers keep and the things that they gain.
I know that there's a lot of dancers listening right now who would jump at the chance, including myself, to be in a room with you, to be able to express myself in that way where I don't have to necessarily kick my face anymore.
Yes, totally. No, it wouldn't be that at all.
And I could be in the room with somebody like, you know, Liz Parkinson and Holly Cruikshank and all of those amazing dancers of a different generation. And that to me is so inspiring. And I'm there however you need me.
I can't wait. I will. You know that like I said this on the air so that now I can hold you to this. So the listeners will write you if you say no.
Well, I love you so much. I'm thanking you so much for taking the time to talk with me. It's been too long. I need to just touch base with you and Rob, and just, you know, get on a Zoom or something and just say hi and have a glass of wine.
Oh, please. And give Dustin our love as well. I mean, it's been so long and I probably saw him last like at Flat Rock. I mean, it's been, I know we crossed a couple of times doing different, he was maybe doing Music on the Rock and I was doing even Nutcracker, or I don't remember where in the years that have that have unfolded of our lives, but I hope.
But I definitely think Flat Rock was probably the last place that we saw each other. But we will be in the studio again, my friend.
Oh, I can't wait for it. I can't wait for it.
I know it. I adore you. Thank you.
I adore you too. Thank you, honey.
To support this podcast, make a donation, or become a sponsor, visit confessionsofanactress.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram for our live Talkin' Tuesday series with former podcast guests. And check in every Wednesday for our bonus episodes, Wellness Wednesdays. And if you're feeling super generous, head over to Apple Podcasts on iTunes and give us a 5-star review. I really appreciate it. And remember, have vision for what you want, but be grateful for where you are every single day.